And welcome to the Pet Savant Unleashed. Well, today we are going to talk about the most wonderful thing on earth, puppies. Because who doesn't love a puppy? Let's face it, puppies fix everything. No matter how sad you are, no matter how depressed you are, no matter what's going on, the weather, the news, the politics, whatever it is in this world, boy, a box of puppies can fix everything. And so can just one puppy. But how do you make that puppy and take it from when you get that puppy? And I'm not talking about rescued adults because we love that. But those are already formed. They've already gone through all their stages of development and socialization. But that's what we're going to talk about today. What do you do, especially coming into, you know, when school is over and everyone gets puppies so their kids can bond with the puppies over the summer and over the summer break. So what we want to do is make sure that not just you, but also that your kids have something to do with the process. Because let's face it, kids who have good relationships with animals tend to form better bonds with humans. They tend to be more empathetic and sympathetic. They tend to be, I don't know, I'll just go off on the end here and say, I think they turn out to be much better people. People who start out with animals in their life when they're young tend to have, and this is the medical portion you can check out for your child, but tend to have fewer allergies later in life because they're exposed to things when they're young. Kids tend to have better relationships with peers, better problem-solving skills. So there's so many things that are really, really important that a puppy or an animal, when a child is young, are going to be able to solve or be able to help with. So what do you do then when you have a newborn little puppy and you get it, whether you purchase it or you rescue it? What do you have to do? It's kind of like a baby. Think about it. Like a baby human, right? We have to do much different things when they're young. But it really depends on a lot of different things. First thing is, think like a dog. Now, there is no right or wrong. We're not going to say, oh, obedience is good or obedience is terrible. It's the only way to go. Anybody, a trainer, or if you do have somebody who is an actual behaviorist, a good person who does their job well is not going to say, oh, you only can do this, or you can only do that, and the other stuff, everything else is terrible. We use every different form of training that makes sense to an animal because it's the way that we can do best for that animal, that dog. And if you say, okay, well, I'm not going to do this or that other than shock collars, which I am quite averse to, I just don't believe in that. It's kind of like yelling if you're arguing with somebody. So think about it. If you argue and you have to yell to get your point across, you probably didn't really have a viable point to start with because otherwise you wouldn't have to yell. So think about shock collars, prong collars, choker chains, and I'm not saying just using them, but using them in an aversive way. They are not good. That is like yelling in an argument because you ran out of ammunition. So instead of that, have a good relationship. Try not to yell. And I don't only mean that yelling physically, but also don't yell in your intentions and your energy. So a puppy is like a little blank slate. And they are not, just because we have been there, they are not going to know where you want them to pee and poop. Some of them are quite intuitive and it's pretty amazing. But they're not going to know those things. So think about, you get a puppy, let's say it's 8 weeks old, which is young. You should really get them at 12 if they are able to be taken from the breeder. If it's a good breeder, a reputable AKC show breeder of merit, they won't even let you have a puppy till probably 12 weeks. But at whatever age you get your puppy, remember, he knows nothing. And he's going to come to you all cute. He may be a little bit skittish. It may be a genetic thing. Keep in touch with your breeder. Make sure your breeder actually is a legitimate breeder. Don't go off of, you know, a Craigslist or something like that and attempt to get, you know, a great dog because, yes, they need rescuing too, but there are some wonderful people who are out there, and I know we do that as well, where we will take those dogs that need special care and special training. So we can do that. But for you, when you're getting a dog for your family, be a little bit selfish. Make sure you have an animal and a breeder that care about that and that have been around a while, not just somebody who's been around for 5 or 10 years even, because 10 years in dog is only potential, if you're doing it right, is only 4 generations. So we want to make sure that whoever it is that you purchase your puppy from is a good, reputable breeder. Get a contract. Go through the contract with them. Don't just sign a dog contract, sight unseen, and say, oh, no, that's fine, because you should have a health guarantee. They should guarantee. My favorite is when they say, we can guarantee against congenital or hereditary issues for the first 3 months. Well, you're not going to know in that first 3 months that it has an issue. Most of these things don't show up till years, 2 years, 3, 4, even more. So you have to make sure that you understand the contract. And if there's something you don't like and that breeder won't even discuss it with you, or perhaps won't let you, change something in the agreement, then maybe you're not at the right breeder. Don't walk in and assume that everyone is the same, because they are not. For instance, some breeders might give you a 10-year guarantee. Now, it doesn't mean that if you let the dog get hurt or the dog eats a foreign body that the breeder is responsible. Of course not. That's like, you buy a new car and you run it off the road and you break all your, undercarriage out and you need a transmission because you did something really egregious to it. That's not what I'm talking about. But if you care for that pet right, that pet should last you many, many years, and the breeder should want to be an integral part of the puppy's life. I have people who literally, I just had one a couple of weeks ago, let me know that at age 14 and a half, a litter mate of one of my dogs who is 14 and a half and still kicking, still fine, passed away finally. 14 and a half years on a large breed dog. That is outrageous. But that's because I've been breeding for over 40 years, and I care not just about my dogs winning in the show ring, which they do, not just about having great temperament so that you never have to worry that your kid's going to get bitten when they're trying to take anything away, because, yes, that is a genetic and a sometimes breeding, breed-specific, but it's always, always, always going to be something that you can breed for temperament. So let me go into something for a moment. There's something called single-trait breeding. Anybody who's going to buy something because it's very tiny, so people are breeding just for it to be tiny, or anybody who is breeding just to make it fluffy or a certain look, that's single-trait breeding. Everything that you guys are doing and everything that the breeder is doing, if it's a reputable breeder, and I'm not talking backyard breeders or puppy mills because they are not breeders. I'm talking about a reputable breeder. They will want to know how that dog or puppy is doing. When my puppies leave me and I cry, yes, I've been crying for 40 some odd years, when my each puppy leaves, because I've been sleeping in the whelping box with it since it was born, since the minute it came out of its mother, I have been sleeping in the box with it. So, yes, it hurts every single time one of these little guys leaves. But I know that I've checked out. I've called 2 personal references and their veterinarian. I have made sure that they have had everything done prior with prior pets, if they have had them. I do check that out. We communicate weekly or more as needed if the family needs more help. I will meet up with people or Zoom call with them if they're having an issue so they can let me know what they need help with. So that's one of the reasons, or many of the reasons actually, why I don't have dogs biting kids in the face. I don't have all these issues that so many of you guys wind up with, because I'm very, very picky and selective in who gets my puppies. So if you contact someone and they don't ask you pretty much for an entire dossier on everything you've done since you're 12, you probably don't want to buy from them, because that means that they're breeding so many that they're just doing it for money. They don't care. They just want to make money and be done. And there are more of them than there are of the breeders like me and my friends from the kennel clubs that I belong to, or even some of the people who breed mixed breed dogs. I have seen two that actually, even though they're breeding mixed breed dogs, they do all the genetic testing on them. They do all the health care and everything. They don't let them out till 12 weeks. So, you know, that's okay. Not that I'm in agreement that we should breed mixed breed dogs, but there is a place for some people who need a dog that doesn't shed. And even though there are so many AKC breeds out there that don't shed and that are good dogs, I'm not going to jump down these people's throats because I feel like at least they're doing it right. You can do the wrong thing, but do it the right way and make something good. So those of you who love your doodles and mixed breed dogs, it's fine. I love mixes, but I won't spend, you know, thousands of dollars on something that's a mixed breed dog when I can go to a rescue and get that same dog. And by the way, there, if you guys like a particular look or style of dog and you say, hey, I would like to get a doodle of some sort, you can get one. But instead of patronizing people who may not be breeding them right, there are so many rescues because, you know, the problem is, and we have three of our employees here who are or were groomers. Doodles take a long time. They get very matted. They need a lot of maintenance. They're one of the highest maintenance dogs out there. And when you get a haircut, you know, for you, you might pay $40 and you might pay every other month, for assuming you're grooming your dog and cutting, you know, everything out and cutting mats out, you may spend $150, $100, $125 every month or two on the doodles. So if you are looking for a low-maintenance, easy dog, it is not going to be that. They're going to be very high-maintenance, one of the most high-maintenance types of dogs out there. So if you're looking for an economical dog that's not going to require a lot of care and grooming and all that, you're probably not going to want to have one of them. There are a lot of other dogs and even some of the terrier breeds like Schnauzers that do not shed much at all. And you just got to do what's right for your family. So let's go back to how do we deal with a puppy with stages of development? Well, first of all, think like a dog. I know that sounds kind of weird. What do you mean think like a dog? Dogs don't think like humans. Let's face it. Dogs think like dogs. I mean, men and women, we're almost the same species. We can't understand each other. This is a whole other species. Canine, canis, and ours are canis familiaris is what the technical term for, you know, domesticated dog is. So if we think like a dog, now let's say you bring home your puppy, and let's say you got it kind of too early. Let's say it's, you know, 8 weeks old, but it's got its first shot. Now, vaccinations take roughly 2 weeks to kick in. Now, I'm going to explain a little bit about that. If you have a good, reputable breeder who has given the vaccinations to the puppy and has not allowed the puppy to go out at least till bare minimum 8 weeks, preferably more than that, and the best is 12 weeks, if you have someone who's good and has given the puppy those vaccinations, they take about 2 weeks to kick in, if that is when the dog's body is then able to accept that. But a good breeder, a reputable breeder, will make sure that the female, the bitch, and yes, you're allowed to say that because it's bitch and dog when you go into a dog show, but you want to make sure that the mama dog has been vaccinated at least a couple of months before, preferably 2 months before, or isn't going to be due for those vaccinations for several more months. This way, you make sure, and you can also titer her to make sure, it's called titering, T-I-T-E-R, to check for the levels that she has of what kind of immunity she's going to have, natural antibodies. So if we knew exactly when the puppy's immunities were going to kick in and the antibodies were going to be starting to be produced, we wouldn't have to vaccinate puppies three times. The reason we do it is mama's immunities should carry them through till at least 8 weeks if mama was properly vaccinated. If she was not, that's where you'll see rescues and shelters vaccinate puppies way young, but if they don't have the history on the mama and they don't know that mama has already been producing all these immunities and antibodies for the puppies and through her milk, then those are the ones that you almost have to vaccinate a little early because you don't know if mama's immunities were sufficient to keep the puppies going. And that's where we hear about a lot of parvo puppies when they're little, before their first vaccinations and 2 weeks after that. So if your puppy is 8 weeks old, do not take that puppy out and start socializing it to everyone or bringing it all over, because a lot of these things that are out there, different canine flus, parvo, all those, they can live oftentimes on surfaces in a dog park, on grass, somewhere else. They can also get, coccidia, which they typically can get from the mom, too. They can get giardia, which is very dangerous even for an adult dog. If it's untreated, it's really deadly and fatal to a young puppy that's not got its immunities yet. So think about this, that the puppies need to get not just emotionally and mentally mature enough to understand what we want, but their bodies also. So puppy bones are thin. Puppy bones are smushy, like they're not hollow, but they're very malleable. They're very easily broken. Somebody steps on them or they fall, which is why you never want to put a puppy on furniture unattended, because especially if there's a young child who may not be capable of doing this properly, because if they fall off and they land on a leg the wrong way, they can break their leg, and it's not that uncommon. So the last thing we want to do is start off in the wrong direction. So let's talk about the stages of development a little bit. So it's more the case of understanding that your puppy is not sent to you to torment you for its first year, but it may appear that way. Think about a crying baby. When you first start out, do you know what your little baby is trying to scream to you? Not really. But the mama would probably know best. So the mother can feel and perceive more than other people. So the mama dog, with canines, right, the mama dog would correct the puppies if there was anything that the puppy was doing wrong. So same thing that we have to do is pretending we're the mama dog. So this is why we don't want to yell at the dog. It's just a puppy. It doesn't know. You have to teach it like you teach a child. You know, take a 10-year-old child who's never been taught anything. They're not a lot of fun. They're not a lot of fun. Because they're not going to know anything. They may not even be, able to be socialized with other people. But a puppy, it's the same thing. So if your puppy right off the bat, let's say you got it from a good breeder, an AKC show breeder of merit, if you get that puppy from that breeder, you should use that breeder as a resource. And that's one of the questions you want to actually ask. And we'll go into that in a few weeks about, how to exactly find a good breeder. But assuming you go on like the AKC.org website is a great resource. I wouldn't necessarily go through their training or whatever, because that's different for everybody, everyone wants, and there's no cookie-cutter, one-size-fits-all approach for this. But it is important to at least look for AKC show breeders of merit, because those are the ones, like myself, who are going to want you to call when you have a problem. I want to know if your puppy doesn't seem to be feeling well. I actually require that everybody, and I tell people that before they're even able to purchase a pup from us, we are going to need to have pictures of the growth plates of the front and back legs every single week for about the next 3 to 4 months until we see how these growth plates are forming. Because most of you are probably scratching your head and going, why would you need that? Well, a larger breed particular can grow at a little bit uneven rates. So if there is protein and calcium and certain other vitamins and minerals and nutrients, if those minerals are lacking or there's an excess sometimes, their growth plates can grow a little bit irregular, and they grow irregularly. it can cause bone. So I had one puppy from the last litter. Their one growth plate on the inside, more, and we added a supplement, changed a couple of things up, and guess what happened? Within two more weeks, that puppy's legs were totally perfect again. And that's important. It's real. That's the kind of breeder you want, the breeder who's going to be like I say. So when I see an issue and I'm doing right, and somebody gives me a call, which doesn't happen very often, we just usually talk about how cute they are and how easy they are. But what do you do when you get the puppy, sure that that puppy learns that you guys are in charge, but that you are super kind, super wonderful, gentle, and generous people? All that puppy's got to do, and that depends on the stages of development. When puppies are very, very little, they're in a primary socialization phase, they're in a flight instinct phase, then they're in another fear impact phase, through a second social development stage. So they're going through things throughout their lives, and I'm not enough time in one show, let alone in 10 shows, to be able to do everything that can happen. But basically, think about it like with your kids, and they're going through stages, and they're going to touch the stove, and they're going to try to get down the steps, and they're going to try to pick things up off the floor. They're going to try to challenge a little bit. Those are all natural phases for humans. They're also natural phases for dogs. So if that's where you can read a book, but if you're noticing an issue, especially a fear issue or a dominance issue, really afraid of everything. When they're 8 weeks old, they should not be afraid of a lot. Their fear phases really don't start seriously until they're about six fear phases, like fear impact phase, from 4 to 8 months. So that's the time where your puppy is looking at something and may like retract from it. You just can, you know, work with a behaviorist, or you can even reach out to us. But it's also a time for learning, for support. What you don't want is do what you do with your children, up and cuddle and coddle. Because for an animal, when especially a dog, when you cuddle them, your husband, when he comes near you, and you pick him up, not the husband, you pick up the dog. When you pick up that dog, you're actually reinforcing that behavior of growling without realizing it. But that's what it means to the dog. It doesn't mean the same thing like we would pick a child up to protect them. When we pick a dog up, he feels like, oh, okay, you're cutting out more of that. Well, that's why behaviorists have a lot of patients, and dog trainers, some dog trainers are, there's no real certification on dog training, and you really have to kind of buyer beware, you know, caveat emptor. So when you have a dog or a puppy who's in that stage of development, sometimes it's more important to know what not to do. Now, these are things that we'll go through in, you know, future weeks, just because there's, but what not to do is very, very important, especially if you have children. Be really careful of letting children under so years of age picking up and holding dogs, because sometimes, especially a puppy who's a little larger or a very tiny puppy that's a little less substantial, if they don't hold it right, they can hurt the puppy and teach the puppy without realizing it that you're teaching the puppy that it doesn't want to be held by, let's say, a child or by anybody, because that puppy is in pain. Maybe the puppy has something going on where, you know, he's got a little bit of a ouchy belly. And your child picks the puppy up, 10 to 2, and now the puppy decides, I don't want this kid near me. So the puppy runs, or the puppy decides it's going to growl or something like that. And now we blame the puppy. Oh, the puppy's growling at my child. Well, maybe we needed, especially at the beginning, we needed to teach the child how not to pick the puppy up, or maybe not pick the puppy up at all. What I tend to do with kids under like 8 or 10, depending on the maturity level of the child, I tend to tell kids, sit on the chair, sit on the floor, sit on the couch, sit on your bed, wherever, and I'll hand you the puppy, and you guys as adults have to supervise. You should be supervising the dog and the child to to make sure the dog, and once you see that the child knows the rules and is being good about it, then, yeah, you can let the child have more, less supervision, a little bit more freedom with it. But don't forget that, you know, kids aren't always the best at following rules either. You know, not that adults are, but kids definitely. So don't just tell your kid, don't do this. Tell your child, imagine if I were holding you and I held you in a way that was uncomfortable for you or that hurt you. And can you understand that that's why we have to be careful with the puppy, because we don't want the puppy to not want you to hold them. So hold them like this, but don't hold them like that. But have a conversation. Don't just, you know, say, oh, you're not allowed to hold the puppy anymore. Teach, always teaching. The same way you have to teach the puppy, you have to teach your kids. Now, we're going to take a very, very quick break. We're going to come back to a little bit more with socialization periods and phases of development. So we will be right back. Stay tuned. And welcome back to the Pet Savant Unleashed. Okay, as promised, we're going to go into the socialization periods now. Now, what this means and phases of development, we all know we have the baby phase where they're screaming and we don't know what they want and the baby's crying and the baby's got, you know, maybe diarrhea and the baby's screaming, crying, everything that and you can't stop that. So it can be a physical issue, certainly. And that's something I want everybody to be aware of, that it really can be a physical issue on puppies. Puppies get things like liver shock if they're poorly bred or certain breeds are more prone to them. Puppies can have digestive issues. Puppies can have malformations. They can have cleft palates. They can have all kinds of things. So your veterinarian is always a great place to start if you see that something looks like something that just you're not getting to respond. It's kind of like a child having a little fever, but the fever doesn't seem to go away after a couple of days. Hopefully, you're going to take your kids to the vet. Well, your fur kids to the vet. And you're going to tell them what's going on and make sure that the puppy's healthy. Assuming the puppy is healthy, let's go through what we can expect. Puppies usually, from the time they're little, they go through between 2 and 4 weeks when their eyes and ears are opening. They go through a primary socialization. So that's all kind of a fun thing, because you're able to socialize the puppy with other puppies before that, right? And during that time. But let's say at 8 weeks, they leave. So they're already done with that phase. Now, their next main phase that they're going to go through isn't till 3.5 to 4 months of age, which is when they have their primary fear impact phase. Now, that's going to be an important time for you and your puppy and your family, because the primary fear impact, maybe a man with a hat tries to do something, or a man with a beard, or a particular sound or something, or, and we're going to go into this after the next break, about dog parks, which we're definitely going to talk about. But that, let's call it roughly 4 to 8 months. They go through that primary fear impact phase. So those are the times we want to take the puppy, but take them places, but make sure you take them to places that you have as much as possible a controlled environment. Don't take them to, you know, fireworks, because they're going to be terrified of loud noises probably for the rest of their lives. Take them to places, you can take them to ball games if they're pretty sedate, and sit back a little bit so that they can take it all in and not be afraid. The key is we want to socialize them and get them used to things without getting them afraid of them. So just getting them used to things. And again, not, you know, taking your dog all day long. Take them for a little bit. Take them for 10 minutes. Take them for 15 minutes, a half hour, and stay back from everything when you first start out. Because what that does is it teaches him, kind of like you're watching something on a TV, it teaches him to be socialized to it without having him be afraid of it. And those are very, very important things. The second thing is, the second fear phase they go through is called a flight instinct period. Now, a flight instinct period is similar, but typically a fear impact, they're going to have something they're afraid of, and they're going to try to potentially run. The flight instinct, I have found as a behaviorist, I have found personally, that flight instinct, they're just going to be like, oh my gosh, oh my gosh, and they're going to be so frazzled that they're going to try to run. These are usually the phases where people say, I don't understand. I trained him. He's been around the same exact thing for 3 months. Why is he suddenly afraid? That's fear phases. That's like your kids going through their terrible twos. So it's, you have to just manage your way through it. Now, it could be that you have a puppy, like most of mine, don't care about much of anything. But it could be that you have a puppy that does. Don't throw away the puppy yet. And I don't mean that physically. I mean that emotionally. Don't say, oh, this is too much work. This is too hard. And by the way, if you ever do feel that, please make sure you reach out to your breeder, because your breeder will help you through if you have done what I've told you earlier in the show and selected a very good breeder. And again, we'll talk about that in the future. But don't wrong in the puppy seemingly forgot it. It's just a phase of development. It is normal. So between 10 and 14 months, they go through that second and final fear impact phase. Now, you may notice the first one was 4 to 8. The second one is 6 to 10 months for the flight instinct. And the third one is sometimes 15 months. And that's your second fear impact. So that middle area, you may think, wait a minute, Janice, between 6 and 8 months, they were in the fear impact and the flight instinct. Yes, they were. I have found, and I would love to do some more scientific research on it, but anecdotally, I have found that the vast majority, and I'm talking 90% plus of the animals I've dealt with, tens of thousands of animals I have dealt with personally through my years, that most of these dogs that have these fears of men, men in beard, men with hats, a particular color, a particular sound, had the experience happen in that 6 to 8 month period while they were experiencing multiple fear phases at the same time. So whether it makes them more likely to be susceptible to that, maybe, but it just seems very strange that that's what happens. Now, along with that, I want to go into the fact that I want you to understand what obedience can do, and I want you to understand what flooding is. Flooding is doing too much where the dog starts to shut down or get terribly afraid. So again, short sessions with your pup doesn't mean you can't play with them. Doesn't mean you can't take him for a walk. Doesn't mean you can't take him out with you. But don't flood him. If you see your pup starting to lick his lips, start to yawn, start to pant, and it's not hot out and you're panting, if you see him shaking off and stretching a lot, more than a couple of times, it means that he's flooded. And basically, think about you taking the SAT, and you're taking that SAT, which is what, 5 hours? But let's say, oh, about after the third section, you start processing, you start yawning, you start stretching, you start jingling the change in your pocket. You do all these things. And the important piece of this is that because the animal can get flooded too, you just don't know because the animal doesn't say, Mom, I'm having problems. It's way too much. And I'm going to cry. But that's the same thing. The animal has that and goes through that same phase. It's just that we don't recognize it because we're waiting for them to, I guess, speak English. I don't know. So we don't want to flood them. So plan your little sessions of taking them out, taking them to the ball game, whatever, staying a little bit farther away, and do it slowly so that they're happy, happy, joy, joy. It's like you taking the SAT multiple times, 5 or 10 times in a row, and that is definitely not something that should be happening. You should not be doing 5 or 10 times for the SAT, and you shouldn't be doing hours and hours for a child or an animal that is undergoing training, because you're setting them up to fail. Now, I want to talk about something else about teaching and how teaching, like behavior, is different from training, which is like obedience. There are a lot of really good local obedience trainers. I would definitely question people. You can actually go on a site called WyattsList.com, WyattsList.com, which has all kinds of really helpful things on the site, like how to select a breeder, how to select a boarding facility. There are some great resources on there that you can check out, and it's free. So you can go on there and check that out. But beside all those things, when do you need a trainer and when do you need a behaviorist? Oh, that's a whole subject for a future show for sure. But it's always great if you have a normal, healthy puppy and he's happy and all that. Try obedience. It's fun. There's a thing called rally obedience that's on a leash, starts out in a leash. There are all kinds of fun things that you can do. Again, you can find those on the AKC.org website. But what's nice about that is it's bonding. Obedience is fun. It's not going to change behaviors. If you have a behavioral issue, it is not going to change behavior. But remember, we're starting with puppies. Obedience is a really fun way to start. There are all kinds of things like agility. There are, depending on the breed, things like lure coursing, sheep herding, crazy things that fun, but the dogs love it. Dock diving, fly ball. So they're all different things depending on your dog's capability. And if you can find these different things and introduce them when they're young, it's going to be really great for both of you and for your family. So think about that for a minute. Teaching is different than training. Teaching is kids going to school and learning to be good people. Or maybe that's happening at your church or synagogue or mosque where you teach people how to get along. That's behavior. Behavior is how to comport yourself, how to act around other people, how to be kind, how to be nice. It is not teaching your child to be Michaela Schifrin going down a hill, by the way, my favorite skier of all time. That is training. Weight training is training. Obedience training is training. So there's nothing wrong with training, but that's training a dog to do a body position, and I always call it the quid pro quo way of dog training. It's training them to do a particular thing for a particular treat or reward. So if you want to have your pup doing, you know, sit, down, you know, come, down, stay, you know, all these things, those are all going to be training things. They're not things that the dog is going to be, you know, basically relinquished for someday because, oh, my dog doesn't sit for a cookie on command. I'm going to give him up to the shelter. I have never, ever once seen somebody say, gee, you know what, Janice? I'm going to give my two-year-old dog up because he's not sitting when I tell him to sit. But I have seen lots of them that, you know, my dog just tried to bite my kid. My dog bit my husband. My dog runs away and goes after the neighbor's chickens or whatever. There are so many things, and those are behavioral. So the difference between behavior and obedience is that obedience is the quid pro quo. It's you do this and I give you a treat. So is it basic behavior? Yeah, we can say that. I mean, it's teaching them not to be rude. But when you have a behavioral issue, you have an animal who's growling. You have an animal who is, you know, running off constantly. You have an animal who's trying to bite or has bitten. Those are, and separation anxiety is a big one, all behavioral issues. And obedience is never going to fix that because that's training. That's being an Olympic medalist. But being a nice Olympic medalist, a good person who helps others, that's behavior. So I have to take a quick break, and then we're going to come back in a minute with the rest of our show. Stay tuned. We will be right back. And welcome back to the Pet Savant, Unleashed. Well, as promised, we're going to talk about some other parts of puppies, because, listen, puppies are the cutest, no matter what they do. Even their little tushies, they waddle around, their little tails going a mile a minute. There's nothing cuter than that. But there are things that we have to also think about with exercise. So exercise is going to be important. But the first year you've got your puppy, and got to make sure growth plates are closed. We do the same things with horses. When you see those bumps on the puppy's legs, and the ones that are most pronounced are usually the ones by their wrist, which is, look at their front feet, their front legs, just above that, where it connects to the main, the cannon bone, the long bone, which would be your forearm bone. So look at your own wrist and look at left and right. And hopefully they're somewhat symmetrical because your wrist bones have, your growth plates have closed. Sometimes you'll see a puppy that those bones are kind of really pronounced. Now, it's normal in certain breeds, especially larger breed dogs. But what you do want to watch out for is when they become too large abnormally, and it almost happens overnight. You'll see within a couple of days, you'll say, wow, that bone on the puppy's knuckles got really, really big all of a sudden. Well, that could mean the beginning of something called panosteitis or pano. So panosteitis is when those growth plates start growing a little too fast. And if they're growing together the same rate but a little too fast is not usually as significant as if one of them is growing more than the other. So if suddenly you look at your puppy and you say, you know something? His leg seems to be turning out or turning in. All of a sudden, go to your vet. Tell them it is an emergency. You need to get in within a day or two. Your vet may change the diet, may say, okay, you need to get on, a different diet, a different formula, lower protein, lower calcium, something like that. But go to your vet. That is not something you want to wait weeks for. If you're going to go on vacation, you know, for 2 weeks, that is not something you want to wait 2 weeks for, because in those 2 weeks, those bones can grow quite a bit. And if they grow the wrong direction, you may wind up having problems. So that's going to be super, super important for you to know. And one of the ways you can also keep your puppy safe is very light exercise. Do not have, I got my puppy, I'm going to run him, on the street. It's very hard. If you guys have ever walked around one of the big box stores or a supermarket that has the hard concrete floors, walk around there for a little bit, half hour, an hour, and you're going to start having your heels are going to hurt, your knees are going to hurt, your hips are going to hurt, your back's going to hurt, because it's very hard. So when puppies are little, and really the larger breeds, sometimes even 18 months, the very, very, those are the giant breeds, the large breeds, a year, 15 months. The little ones, sometimes it's 8 months. But you've got to be very sensitive to that, to these growth plates and to the actual growth process. You don't want these puppies to be exercising too much on a very hard surface. They're not ready for it. Their bodies are not mature. You have to wait until all their growth plates close. Again, great question for your veterinarian upon your very first checkup when you bring the puppy in to make sure the puppy's healthy and all that. Ask them. Ask your vet about what you can do and when you can do it. Vets are so good. They've gone to school for 4 years. They know what they're talking about. For the vast majority of vets are very, very knowledgeable, a little bit different than some of the other fields that we have to deal with in life, but most veterinarians have gone into it because they love the animals. They genuinely care. Find yourself a good vet. Stick with your vet so that your vet knows your animal as it grows up, and you can trust that person and make sure that person is somebody that you want to deal with, because it's not just about shots. It's like having your child's pediatrician. It is very, very important to have your child's pediatrician, someone you can talk to, someone you can trust. So if you are having your dog, you want to exercise a little and you want to jog, do a little bit differently. Just if you're going to jog or you want to go out, find a place where you can be on the path, like a running track at potentially a school is always great. And you can be on the pavement and the puppy can be on the grass, so it's cushioning. But again, don't go out for miles and miles because you have to be careful. And again, talk to your vet about how much exercise and what to avoid as well as what to do. Now, I'm going to touch briefly on food and nutrition and talk about puppies and why it's so important for them to have everything that they need so that you can have a great life with your puppy and a long life. So we all know about, avoid chocolate and onions and macadamia nuts and all the other things that we have to avoid, raisins, grapes, those things. But there are a lot of other things that are really, really important for you to know about. So food and nutrition, not just with physical growth, but some animals are kind of sensitive to certain ingredients, just like people are. So a lot of animals tend to be, if you want to call it allergic or sensitive to wheat and gluten. Not all of them, not most of them, but a lot of them actually are. So you want to avoid those things as much as possible. Get on, again, you can talk to your veterinarian, and your veterinarian will probably be able to guide you very well towards what would be a good idea for your particular breed. Talk to your breeder, assuming he's got a good AKC show breeder merit, you're going to see that breeder is going to tell you pretty much what to feed, what to do, where to go, all those things. So they're going to be a great resource for you. But be wary of anybody who is telling you you have to purchase a particular type of food, because there are some people, and again, I don't think you're going to find this so much with AKC show breeders of merit, but you may see that with a lot of places where they're going to say, I need to have, you need to have the puppy on this particular thing for your guarantee, your limited guarantee warranty on a puppy to be valid. So anybody who's trying to put you onto a food that's 16 times more money than the food that you wanted to use, be careful about that, because they do get a kickback, some of them. Now, there are some products that are really good, like probiotics that you can get on Amazon. The ProViable is a very good one. There's actually ProViable Forte, which comes if you ever have a puppy that or a dog that has a lot of digestive issues. A lot of the vets will put them on that. There are different oils and things that are really wonderful that you can absolutely have, a good working knowledge of, and that's good. There are vitamins like the NuVet Plus, which I use and we have at our facility here. We have all of our dogs on it, and there's another one called NuJoint, NuJoint, so it's NuVet.com. Fantastic, fantastic. You can tell them you heard about the product on our show. It's a great product. I use that. But I'm very careful about what I do use and make sure that, especially with foods, there are several different good foods that are out there. I'm not going to tell you what I use because I use that for my breed of dogs and my breeds of dogs. But you may have to change up if you have, let's say, a second puppy. Let's say you got a little Cavalier King Charles puppy. They're going to have different nutritional needs than something like a Ridgeback or like a Great Dane, where you want to have a lower protein and use a large breed. So it's not just the kibble size. People think that, the little tiny kibbles are for the little dogs. Not always, okay? That's not really a good indicator of that. That's like, saying that something is a generality that really doesn't exist. So one of the things that I think is important with people is to make sure that they speak with their breeder again and see what protein it is. Do not sign a contract that you have to use a particular product. Like I said, I love NuVet, but I will never, ever, ever put that in a contract that they have to use that, because they're, if they can't either, the dog can't, won't eat it or whatever, although I've never really seen animals that don't gobble those things down and steal them. But let's say a a particular brand of food. There are brands of food. There's one particular. I'm not going to knock them. It's a decent food. It's comparable probably to some of the box store brands, but it's three or four times the price. So, you know, who knows if the breeder's getting a kickback from the company or something. So you just want to make sure that you're doing the right thing for your dog and your breed of dog. And again, your veterinarian is a great resource. They don't all know about food and nutrition, but your breeder or other breeders of that breed, and now it's great, you can go on a forum and say, hey, you know, this is the food I was recommended to use. Does anybody else who breeds that breed of dog who's, you know, either AKC, breeder of merit, or somebody in, you know, actual people who own those dogs, because it's very important for your specific dog, and your dog could have allergies, your dog could have problems, and other people who have those dogs, especially people who've had multiple of them for many years, those are going to be a great resource for you. So we'll go into food and nutrition. We always talk about that. We have that probably every couple months, so you can look back at another episode and definitely find food and nutrition information. The last thing is, be really selective with playmates. Okay? Dog parks are great, but they're also not great. Dog parks carry a lot of diseases. You have puppies here, 8 weeks, 12 weeks, 16 weeks, they're getting their vaccinations. You do not want to frequent dog parks until the puppy is at least 2 weeks past its final series of shots, which is at 16 weeks is their last series of shots. Then they get the vaccinations then. 2 weeks later, they should have immunities. Have at it. Again, still be careful and be selective, but you're at least safer at that point because you know they've got that. So dog parks carry all kinds of diseases. I'm not even talking about the dogs there, just the soil. They have funguses and bacteria. The animals pee and poop in there. You don't know who's gotten their animal vaccinations. You don't know what stray animal, what bird pooped in the water there, that they're going to wind up with Giardia. You don't know what is going to be happening in that. So your own yard, if you do have a yard, is going to be a great place to keep your puppy, and even putting a little X pen, like a little, basically it's called an EX or just the letter X pen, depending on which company you buy. But it's just like, it almost looks like a crate without a top, and it's movable. There are usually 8 panels. Set that up in an area and use that area alone. They have actually, which we purchased a bunch of, these great 4x8, they're like almost like an outdoor kennel, but it has a top on it so that it's rainproof. And the nicest thing is you don't have to worry if an animal is going to get in there. You don't have to worry if a bird is going to poop on something, your puppy's going to lick his paw and wind up with Giardia. It's a much safer way of having your puppy not get sick. So dog parks are not just, you know, dangerous, I'll say, for the reason that they can have diseases. But remember, when you have your new puppy, you want him to be socialized to everything. So if you go and let him out loose in a dog park when he's, you know, 3 months old, and another dog comes and attacks him, he may, or even scares him, he may wind up being terrified of other dogs or become dog aggressive. So why would we want to do that? Socialize your puppy to other puppies his age. Socialize your puppy to other animals. If you live near a horse farm or anything, let them see that there are other animals. Just remember, be careful before that 18-week mark. So start getting your puppy ready. And when you do have, somebody who's got a puppy who's the similar age, or an older dog is great too, like an older lab or golden who's not rough, who's very gentle. We all know that we have some dogs that are just great breeds, great dogs. You can let them socialize with older animals or even a 2 or 3 year old animal. Just make sure that that animal isn't going to hurt your puppy, because even unintentionally, a puppy, you know, a 10 pound puppy getting swatted by, you know, a 100 pound dog's paw, your puppy can get hurt. So you just want to, like you would do with your children, be very selective with playmates. And unfortunately, we are out of time again. I don't know why this always happens. I feel like I need to have 2 hours at least to get through everything I want to get through. We're going to be back with you next week. It is Memorial Day weekend, so let's all have safe fun. Please don't bring your dogs to the fireworks unless they have been there many times and are used to it. Be safe. Don't let your dogs get into any food at the picnics. And be healthy, happy, and God bless you all. Have a wonderful, happy, healthy weekend.